Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
If you've been with us on Open House over the last couple of weeks, we've had some golden advice from author Paul Stevens, who's written Taking Your Soul to Work. I think for many of us, this book is an absolute gem and a great encouragement to us when work becomes such a burden, and especially when it seems such a spiritual desert. How can I live out an authentic Christian life alongside my work comrades? And how to put virtues into practice at work, like love, joy, patience, and self-control. Tonight, we'll wrap up our three-part series with a look at spiritual practices we can use at work. Welcome back, Paul.
Oh, thanks very much for inviting me back.
Thank you. Paul, last week we talked about the virtues that help us overcome everyday challenges at work. Let's hear about some of those more spiritual practices, as you describe them, that we can put into place. Let's start with prayerfulness, which you mention in your book. The Bible talks about praying without ceasing, but I wonder how can we possibly do that at work, or like all the time?
It doesn't mean kneeling down in the middle of the workplace and folding your hands and closing your eyes and not getting about the thing that you're being paid to do.
Yes.
But I think it does mean this, that as Brother Lawrence, who was a cook in a monastery kitchen in the 12th century, actually, he said, "My greatest business does not divert me from God." Before he had any task to do, he went straight to God and he said, "Look, I can't do this without your helping me." And I'm a prime example of that. I've been a pastor, I've been a carpenter, I've been a business person, and most recently a professor, and now I'm supposed to be retired, but I'm doing more than I ever did when I was employed.
Yes.
The thing is that when I moved from a pretty big university church into carpentry, I mean, most people thought I'd left the ministry and, you know, it wouldn't be very prayerful and all the rest of it. I prayed more as a carpenter than I ever did as a pastor. And perhaps one of the reasons is I was somewhat out of my depth, you know, and I had to pray before I made a saw cut and a very expensive piece of wood and so on. So you could say that any of our activities in the workplace, really, whether it's holding up a difficult co-worker or a difficult boss, you know, in prayer, or going into a meeting and holding up that meeting in prayer and praying for the corporation or the organization itself, and praying for our own attitudes towards various things that come up in the workplace, it's a fantastic opportunity to pray.
Yes, and also recognition of our dependence on God, which is very real and very sensible.
Well, and it's what we're made for. I mentioned in our earlier conversation the fundamental problem of human beings is autonomy. That is, I can be my own God. And that comes right out in Genesis chapter 3 in the story in the Garden in Eden, where the serpent basically said, you can be your own gods. Just, you know, get pleasure, get provision, and get power without any relationship to God. So I think it's a question of our dependence on God, and that we really need God moment by moment, and we need him in the workplace. Mm. So work becomes a fantastic opportunity to pray, but not necessarily long prayers, like Nehemiah's arrow prayer, as some people have called it, where the king said to him, what do you want to do about the situation in Jerusalem that you're describing? It was all, the walls were all beaten down and so on. He said, what do you want to do about it? And he said, I prayed to the Lord, and I answered the king. Well, he didn't take 5 minutes to pray to the Lord. He just said, God, please help me.
Yes. Paul, you raise the interesting concept of persistent gratitude in your book, even in the face of a difficult time. What kind of a difference does that make at work?
Well, I think that many people either don't get into their work because they're so dissatisfied with it, or they keep moving from job to job looking for the perfect situation, which, of course, never does exist. And I think that gratitude enables us to really get into our work where we are because we're thankful for the work. It's a gift of God, as Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament says. This is the gift of God, that we're able to work. And further, it enables us to stick with it. And I can see so many of my friends that have stuck with a particular workplace for a long time. And I know in our society today, people move every 2 or 3 years, but you know, the fruit of a long-term investment in a project or a corporation and so on is just fantastic, I think, the fruitfulness that comes from that. And it's really a kind of persistence. One of the great authors in this whole field of spirituality and work is Cardinal Wyszynski, who is the mentor to the late Pope John Paul II. And he says the primary thing we get from work spiritually is patience, because it kind of, in a way, forces us to stick with it, and it invites us to continue and not just simply looking for a better situation, sometimes for not very good reasons.
And gratitude, even in the midst of a tough job. So it's not that it has to be easy or particularly joyful going to work. Sometimes it is tough.
No. In Canada, we had very recently, we had what we call Thanksgiving, and I'm not sure you celebrate it. Do you celebrate it in Australia?
Some do, and we should.
Some do, and some don't. Because Australians are, they should be. I think they are thankful.
Yeah,
but
it should be.
I was sitting in church, and the couple next to us were weeping through the Thanksgiving service. They have a daughter that's dying of disease, and it made me think, you know, the sermon was about all the things we can be thankful for, and I thought, can we be thankful for the hard things, whether it's in the workplace or in life? And I think we can, because these, in fact, grow us. And in fact, James says, count it all joy when various trials afflict you. These trials can take place right in the workplace or in the family or in the home, in the neighborhood, in society, in the municipality, whatever it may be. And he says, count it all joy, because all of this is actually proving and developing your character.
Yeah.
And so, again, I think this is a fruit of workplace spirituality, is that our character gets formed.
Yeah. And it highlights our dependence on God and gives us the opportunity to look beyond the immediate circumstances, tough though they may be, in front of us to a bigger picture.
That's right.
You speak of joyful relinquishment as a spiritual practice. What do you mean by that?
Well, I wouldn't say this is a very popular thing to consider, but most people, as part of their ambition for their lives, can only think of enlarging, deepening, getting a higher pay, a more influential position, and so on. And actually, I think that followers of Jesus can actually take a kind of downward mobility. I don't think it's wrong that somebody, in fact, it's fantastic when somebody of faith finds themselves in a senior leadership position in politics or in business. We got a classic Old Testament story of that in the case of Esther, who ended up being queen to King Xerxes, and was of tremendous influence in that huge Persian nation. It's modern Iran, as a matter of interest. But I think that it doesn't become a kind of hardship to take lower positions. And we can do this in the home, and we can do this in business, we can do this in politics.
It's a very radical thought.
Well, it is. My wife just had back surgery for a second time, and I know this sounds like a male thing, but I ended up taking over everything in the house, which is, you know, making the meals, washing dishes, doing the fabric, cleaning, all the rest of it. And I've always done some of this, but she's done most of it. And I learned a lot of things from this. You know, I learned when you make a meal, it's eaten, and then it's all gone. You have to make another one of those flipping things about 4 hours later. You know, and you sweep the floor because it's dirty, and it gets dirty again.
I'm impressed that you've got away with it until now.
I'm impressed, too. But, you know, I began to realize, I mean, first of all, it's holy work. Secondly, it's God's work. God keeps everything running. He does chores. And so it really doesn't matter what we do. We can actually be entering into God's work, and we can have a kind of joyful and thankful and grateful perspective on it, whether we're watering flowers or making a meal or making a deal or actually making an invoice or using our voice to communicate or to sing.
It's a great perspective. In your book, you tell an interesting story about one particular executive who really learnt this joyful relinquishment and put it into practice.
Well, yes, and actually my co-author, Alvin Ung, I think it's not the person referred to in the story, but he is a person who is very high up in a huge corporation in Malaysia, and actually learned a whole lot from that senior position that he held. But then now is doing, you might say, lowly work for the same company. And it's fantastic. It's great. And he's very happy in what he's doing, including, interestingly, being commissioned by that company to write a book on people that are making a difference in Malaysia, many of whom are people of faith. In fact, most of them are. Some are Muslims and some are Christians.
And I bet that'll make a difference too. On Open House, we're with author Paul Stevens, the author of the book Taking Your Soul to Work. We're working through part three of our series, a great series on Open House. If you want to catch the other two, our first two chats, they're up on our Open House website. Paul, another similar kind of spiritual practice that you mention, in addition to joyful relinquishment, is surrendered contentment. It's about complaining less and accepting the work that's in front of us. Again, even if it's hard stuff or unpleasant stuff.
Yes, I think that in many ways the culture around us is constantly inciting us to be discontent. And it's partly because we're being appealed to be personally self-realized and all the rest of it. You must have this to feel like you're a fulfilled person. But I think one of the fruits of workplace spirituality is that we can be content. And I have to tell you personally, this has not been easy for me, but I think I'm growing in it. I think I've learned how to be discontent. And for the first, you might say, section of my working life, I'm 74 now, so I've been working a long time. But in the first section of it, I kind of moved every 3 or 4 years. And now I've actually had 25 years associated with Regent College in Vancouver. And people say, well, you know, how come? You know, this is not like you, and so on. But I think it's partly because I am more content. And it's discontentment that makes us keep looking for another situation where we can use our gifts more or where our benefits are going to be greater or something of that sort. And I think a real fruit of workplace spirituality is that sense of settledness, that we can actually do God's work where we are. We can make a contribution. We can love our neighbor, even if we don't see our neighbor. Through our work, like research people and folks that are working in laboratories and so on, don't see the neighbor that they're actually serving, but they're loving their neighbor through their work, and they can be content in that.
So what helped you be more content?
I think it's, again, being confronted with myself. And of course, that happens when people confront you with your behavior. But it also happens when you are reflective on your own life. And this is where I think a rhythm, as I was speaking earlier about Sabbath, but a rhythm of engagement and reflection, which I think Jesus practiced. He was very involved, but also very withdrawn. Mm. And that rhythm of engagement and withdrawal seems to be critical to dealing with those soul-sapping struggles in our person and appropriating the fruit of the Spirit and really gaining the fruit of workplace spirituality.
Paul, here's an interesting spiritual practice that leapt out at me. Vocational confidence. What do you mean by that? Can you explain that?
Well, I think it's a sense of that I am called of God to do what I'm doing. Of course, calling is more than to work. It's to life. It's to relationship with God, relationship with people. But work's part of it. And the sense of vocational confidence is that I'm really doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I was made for this. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's interesting. I think people who claim not to have faith oftentimes will give witness to something that you could say is a calling or a vocation. They say, I was made for this,
yes,
or something like that. And it's the point of contact, I feel, as a person of faith with those that claim not to have faith. I can say, well, who do you think's calling you? Because calling implies a caller. If there's a callee, there has to be a caller.
Yes.
So I think the sense of vocational confidence is sensing that we're in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time. And that's very liberating for us. It enables us to have a real dynamism, I think, in our lives. And in our work, we're not always looking over our shoulder for greener pastures somewhere else, but we're able to invest right where we are.
Paul, to wrap up our series, which I think has been of immeasurable benefit to so many people who listen to this program, can I ask you this? What about if you're in a job that you're really just not cut out for? Do you think God really wants us to do something we hate almost for the rest of our lives? Or should those kind of people be looking at their passions and the gifts that they've got to try to find something better? What would you say to them?
It's a very, very critical question globally, because I would think half of the world doesn't have much choice.
Yes.
And in the so-called West and Eurasia, I think we have an incredible privilege of a lot of choice, and perhaps not as much as we used to even, but nevertheless we have choice. But a lot of the world is really much closer to the situation that the Apostle Paul deals with in Ephesians and Colossians, where he's addressing masters and slaves. I think it's fair to say that slaves in the ancient world were in some ways more dignified than slavery in the West had become.
Yeah.
But even there, he says, slaves, obey your master, and not just when their eye is on you. That is, they're looking at you, so you're going to work hard, but even when they're not looking at you, because it is the Lord Christ you're serving. Now, what do slaves do? They mop floors, they make meals, they drive the chariot down to the market or whatever else. And so I think that that's not a word to say, be satisfied with what you have and never, you know, never make a change if you can make a change. But I think it's saying if you can't make a change, although Paul actually elsewhere says, if you can get your freedom, take it.
Hmm.
So I would say, first of all, for those who are in a work situation where they don't have any choice, I think that workplace spirituality enables you to do this heartily, wholeheartedly,
yes,
as to God, and in a way that is meaningful, because you can recognize that you're actually serving God and you're serving a neighbor. If you have a choice and you're in a job that is very, very unfulfilling and not appropriate for your gifts and talents, in all probability, you're going to grow if you stay in that job.
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah.
You're going to grow. But if you have a choice, then I think it's a great thing to be able to choose something that is more appropriate for the capacities and gifts that you have. I've heard the advice, never choose something on the basis of your strengths, but rather on the basis of your weaknesses. And I think that's very bad advice, because I think in anything you choose from your strengths, you're going to find there's a whole lot of area of weaknesses that come out anyway, and you're going to grow.
Yeah. Paul Stevens, I've just loved our three chats over these last 3 weeks. As I said, it's been of enormous value to so many, I'm sure, and certainly to me. Thank you so much indeed for sharing your wisdom and your insights. Thank you.
Thank you, and it's been a joy to be with you.
Paul Stevens is the co-author of the book, Taking Your Soul to Work. We'll put the details up on our Open House community Facebook page.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.